Thanks for joining us, John. The PFA has released their annual A-League report, and some of the key findings have made for very interesting reading, especially the short-termism that seems rife in the A-League with regards to contracts. Why don't clubs sign players for longer-term deals when there's an incentive for fans to see their favourite players for longer and an incentive for clubs that, like Sydney FC, have had consistent squads that generally achieve success?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. It's certainly an area we focused a lot of our research on during the season. To your point, you know, globally there's this trend to more stable, more consistent squads having success. Now, part of that's self-fulfilling in that if you're actually having success, you're less likely to move players on. And if you're chasing success, you tend to be rotating through players. But when you look at it globally, it's actually, you know, trends towards teams that build continuity in their rosters tend to have more success. So you have this, I suppose, high-performance imperative behind it. But the other key thing is, you know, we all know how profitable or how potentially beneficial overseas transfers are for clubs, and the failure to have particularly younger players or even more experienced players who might catch the eye of clubs throughout Asia, having those players on longer term contracts really does erode the capacity of A-League clubs to maximise and build value in their player roster. And then finally, actually developing young players becomes terribly difficult if they have the anxiety of these rolling one-year contracts. So you've got this vicious cocktail that sits on top of an already pretty volatile and fluid industry. I mean, even within the most stable environments, football can be quite fluid. Yet we have all these additional levers that are driving increased volatility. And what we're looking at is we think it in large part is due to the way the salary cap currently works. What it seeks to do is fit players into very narrow boxes on a club's roster, almost like boxes that need to be ticked, and you need to move those chess pieces around or those boxes around almost every 6 months or every transfer window to ensure that you're actually meeting the requirements of your salary cap. So whether that's having X number of youth players on your roster, whether that means having only two marquees, whether that means not being able to spend more than 2.9 to 8 million within the salary cap, whether that means having three scholarship players. There's all these regulations that sit within the current salary cap system that are designed to give clubs flexibility, but actually just foster this short-term thinking. So it just pours fuel on an already lit fire, and we need to move away from it. We've had it for 13 or 14 seasons now. It achieved some equilibrium over time, but now it's certainly not fit for purpose and we need to revisit it.
John, it's Athos here, and this report, of course, was special given that it allowed the PFA to incorporate direct feedback from the players. Given that the salary cap is very much a foreign concept to many of the international players, was any feedback received from these international players in relation to the salary cap?
Yeah, absolutely. We interviewed a lot of guys, also anecdotally, in terms of just surveys, and there's a real misunderstanding about how the salary cap can work, and we've seen that play out with a lot of high-level players leaving the A-League over the past transfer window. So somebody like Adrian Wisniewski, whose performances were as good as anybody the A-League's ever seen, he's a victim of the salary cap. He's not in the A-League now because the constraints within which Sydney FC were operating meant they weren't able to offer him a coherent, cohesive contract. So you end up entering into these contorted agreements that, you know, it's almost like dancing the limbo. You know, 1 year you're under this amount, and the next time you're standing up, and it creates a lot of uncertainty in these players' minds about how this system actually works, which then results in players leaving the competition and looking at more, not always more lucrative opportunities, but probably more easy to understand opportunities.
John, it's Nick here, and obviously touching on the salary cap, I saw in the report that there was a lot of talk about the league not being as balanced, the same team seeming to win it every season. Do you believe that by scrapping or potentially expanding the salary cap, we could see maybe the league achieve more equilibrium?
we have now is we have a situation where there's this huge distortion in competitive balance. So it can't get any worse. So what we're doing is we can't make the lopsided nature of the competition can't get worse, yet we're overlaying all these other problems onto it. So I think our point is let's start again and let's say, okay, maybe we can build a structure where we can build other levers in that will cultivate some form of competitive balance, but more importantly, not just having games more even for the sake of it, but actually having clubs build rosters, build teams that actually resonate with their local communities. So if you're watching games in Sydney or in Melbourne, it's a very different expectation than watching a game in a Newcastle or a Central Coast, where you do want to see your local players. You do want to have that really strong connection to, or that organic connection to your community, which is very different to a Sydney FC who might thrive in a Del Piero, for example. So, you know, clubs need to be given that flexibility to build their own rosters, and I think with that, you'll see a greater equilibrium in squad balance. I think you'll see teams become more competitive throughout Asia, which is another area we need to improve in. So, now there's so much we can actually do by scrapping what we're doing now and starting again more intelligently.
What would some of those levers look like, John? Are you referring to perhaps a revenue sharing arrangement rather than a peak of how much you can pay players that obviously has a downward pressure on wages?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that should be on the table for discussion. I think what's shown, the easiest, where you want an equal competition, and in football, equal competitions aren't necessarily the most attractive or most interesting. The two most lopsided competitions in the world are the English Premier League and the Champions League, and they're also the two most popular. So, firstly, there's not necessarily a nexus between, you know, even games and highly entertaining games. So, what we're looking at is being able to allow clubs to build these competitive teams. And I think there's some different models around the world that we should be looking at. And even in Australia, the NBL, which has done really well in recent season, has moved away from the salary cap and moved more towards a luxury tax model. Major League Baseball has a luxury tax system. You guys, I don't know how aware of it you are, but yeah, the way a luxury tax works is it has different triggers on a club's payroll. And when they reach certain triggers, they need to pay a tax on money spent over that amount, which then gets redistributed to the smaller clubs. So to put that into an A-League context, if Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory chose to spend over $6 million, they might pay a tax on that money, and that would go back to help the smaller market teams who are struggling to make the finals under the current model to be able to reinvest in their squad to help them compete. So that's certainly something we should be looking at because, you know, we need to attract high-quality players. We need to attract the Hondas. We need to attract the Del Pieros. We need to be able to keep the Mizievskis and the Leroy Georges. But also, we need to help the Mariners and the smaller market teams compete on a level footing. So absolutely, we need to look at things like the luxury tax and other models that are working around the world rather than what I call this Frankenstein's monster of the current cap, which is 13 years ago, John O'Neill and co. said it's this amount of money, and you know, there's just been horse trading ever since. You know, extra marquee, some players outside the cap, relocation allowances, increase the cap by this much. There's no science to it. And that's what we've got to do. We've got 14 years of knowledge. Let's build a cap, or let's build a player-painted model that allows clubs to build exciting teams over periods of time that can attract audiences locally, but also be competitive internationally.
I think what gives most people pause for thought when they consider the scrapping of the salary cap as an A-League fan, they're worried about those small market teams being left behind, the likes of Newcastle and Central Coast Mariners and Wellington Phoenix. But as the report does show, these teams are almost already being left behind. They haven't made anywhere near as many finals appearances as the big market clubs.
Yeah, so we've got the worst of both worlds. We have a cap that means we can't have the most attractive product on the pitch, but we have a cap that entrenches inequality. So that becomes problematic. And, you know, you can see by Mariners finishing 44 points behind Sydney FC, Wellington about 40 points. We already have this significant gap. So the salary cap's clearly not achieving the competitive balance it seeks to achieve. So we need to reconsider that. And I've got no doubt it will allow particularly these, even the smaller market clubs, to build their rosters strategically. And that might mean skewing to younger players. You know, look at Newcastle last season. There's no coincidence that Newcastle went from the bottom team to playing off in a grand final because they invested in their squad. They had an owner who was prepared to strategically invest. They made some smart recruits. They spent more money. And they achieved success. Now, you don't have to break the bank to be competitive. You just need to spend a certain amount of money to ensure that you're going to be there or thereabouts. And that's what the data will show, that you don't have to be the high-spending team to win, but you do need to spend a certain amount of money to be competitive. So I think that by trading this, you know, by having a model like a free market with a transfer system or a luxury tax built in, we can actually build a model that's more sustainable for clubs, a model that gives them more incentive to put players on longer-term deals and sell them overseas, and a little bit of reality to the market. Because whilst certain clubs might struggle and not able to pay at the top end, a Melbourne Victory is doing really well. They'll make another profit probably this year, which could be for the third or fourth successive year. They've got a market in Melbourne that's saturated with sport. They need to be one of our leading sporting properties, and they can't do that by having a system that's designed to ensure that the smaller market teams can try and be competitive when we know they actually can't under the current system. So let's reconsider, let's rethink it, and let's look at a model that helps the smaller market teams build their rosters to become competitive, but helps the clubs in the bigger markets build clubs that can capture their market's attention and compete internationally.
Also, John, in the report, it spoke about the increase in injuries amongst the playing stocks. It's increased from 130 to 160 over a certain period of time. Do you think that comes down to, obviously, the lack of rotation, the lack of chances for some of these guys under 21 and reliance on some of their older bodies that are more fixture names throughout these clubs?
Yeah, we did look at the qualitative aspect of that, so it's difficult to read too much into the specifics. It does ebb and flow year on year, so we certainly did see an increase this year that was about 10%. You know, in our view, that's about a $5.3 million cost to the industry in terms of wages that effectively go that are unavailable for use in any given week. But yeah, we've seen over time that would skew down. So over the last 10 years of doing the injury report, we've seen these amounts go down year on year. So that's the positive. We're seeing a little spike this year, but we can't attribute that to anything specific. And our view would be that over time, longitudinally, that the number of injuries are going down.
We are, of course, speaking to PFA CEO John Didelitzer about the PFA report, which was released earlier today. The most eye-catching of the statistics in the report were 63% of players were coming off contract midway through the last season. John, with the expansion in the near future, to what extent will this contribute towards resolving this issue?
Yeah, I think expansion is one tool to help drive more security for players. I think the better players, or certainly players that are more valued by their clubs, might be re-signed for longer periods because they won't want to lose those players to clubs coming into the market. So there'll be a spike, but that again will just be a sugar hit. You know, we might have two clubs next season, two clubs the year after, but then what happens thereafter? Do we get back into this this cycle of players washing in and out of the A-League and NPL and overseas and back into the A-League? Because that's not necessarily where we want to go. We don't want to have players constantly having to transition from environment to environment. So whilst I think expansion will be a short-term positive, I think what we'll see is it just revert back or regress back to the mean once the expansion phase is complete. So we can't rely purely on that to solve this problem. We need to take a more systemic view. And I think it's important to recognise is we're not recommending for more money. This isn't about the clubs needing to spend more. This is about actually building a platform so that people can build value in their clubs, build values through high transfer fees, build values by having better quality players being trained for longer, build value by having a stronger connection between fans and their players. And we've done a lot of market research in this area too around how important it is for fans to have that relationship with their with the players they support year on year. So that's something else that we'll bring out in time through this research. So, you know, it's not a cash grab. This is purely about setting the game up for success long term.
John, one of the interesting statistics in the report was that players aged 31 and over play more than 40% of the available minutes in the A-League, whereas under 21 players take up only 6%. Is there anything that the PFA is advocating to increase the amount of minutes that young players get at, in this competition, or is it just a factor of the available minutes, expansion, adding more games, and hopefully that way it'll increase the spread?
Yeah, no, that's the answer. I mean, it's as simple as that. I think, you know, I call rules, I'm a lawyer, unfortunately, and I really don't think rules work. I think you can try and regulate for outcomes, but the market will decide where it wants to take the outcomes that, that they're after. So just by introducing a rule saying you must have X amount of young players, we'll end up in farcical situations, like we saw in China, for example, where Louis Bowles would start with three, with the requisite number of Chinese players and take one off after 15 minutes. So what we need to do is actually build the professional footprint in this country. The only solution to better youth teams, better opportunities for younger players, is to create more opportunities for young players by creating those jobs. You know, even a loan system, whilst great for this year to have a look at, it's broadly a zero-sum game. Because if one young player, if a young player goes from Club A to Club B, odds are he's taking the position of a young player at Club B. So you end up with a zero-sum equation. So for us, the only solution to helping more match minutes for young players and building the pool of minutes they have available to them is expanding the A-League and really focusing on this second tier and doing the hard work to get a second division up within, you know, at least the next, you know, World Cup cycle. We need to be getting, we need, you know, 20, 24 professional teams throughout the country and build our professional footprint as soon as possible. Otherwise, we'll get left behind.
Well, John, we must let you go. We've barely scratched the surface. There is so much more to talk about, but thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Anytime, gents. Thank you for the time.